Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. October 16, 2020. Fall, but do not lose your aspiration forward. The main thing is to be aiming forward all the time. Then I fall and rise and again fall and rise, as it is said, 1,000 times the righteous will fall and rise again. This is actually true. It is not possible to advance without errors, without falls, without problems. It is through them that a person learns. It is impossible to achieve anything otherwise, as it is said, one cannot carry out a mitzvah, commandment, unless one breaks it first. A commandment is an action of bestowal. It is impossible to achieve bestowal without first revealing how opposite you are to it. Gradually, we will begin to integrate into this system. We do not just learn the material, we absorb it, and it builds us up. The internal systems, the brain and the heart, feelings and mind, take the form of those thoughts that we absorb from the articles and they build our soul. It turns out that the broken will to receive begins to connect its atoms and molecules into all sorts of new forms. All its parts are getting connected together, building a system that operates not according to the laws of egoism, but according to the laws of bestowal. This means that we are beginning to enter a new, opposite world, a spiritual space. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, October 2, 2020, Sukkot. New Life 500. The Bible as the foundation of life.
Hello, thank you for being with us here on New Life, the series of educational discussions with Rav Leitman. Hello, Rav. Hello. Hello, Tal.
Hello.
We're going to be discussing with Rav today about being the nation of the book. Is an expression that we carry with us for thousands of years, but the book itself, the Tanakh, the Torah, is something that we carry with us, and we are interested in today even more than before. It's come to throughout all the years, there are different ways that we relate to it. The book of books here in the whole world is all made up and wrapped mystery. We would like to enter with Rav Leitman inwards and understand what's in it that will even today bring us to that better place. How we bring it, brings us to a new life. Tal, please. Tal, for me, the discussion today, and in general, the thing that we talk about the book, about our nation, the discussion about ourselves and our essence. And I feel like many people are kind of like missing in this equation. And what can express the state that we're in, that we live with many contradictions, many blocks in our understanding that maybe, and just inevitably without understanding, if today, if we were trying to decipher somewhat the, and kind of like look at the topic, so if we look at the Bible, I grew up as a secular. I learned it as some kind of literary creation and a few of the things. We had to develop some of the things here and there, how the songs and so on. So I'm a very dry, technical way, and not a lot of it remained. Whereas in the religious education, it's a historical book that what happened and so on. And also there are many different places. And probably there's also a question of whether it was exactly like that historically. So there are a lot of contradictions, many interpretations, many commentaries, and a lot of contradiction on the topic. And still this book is considered the foundation of the identity of the people of Israel. Meaning, even if we don't understand what's written there exactly and don't agree with it, you just can't get rid of it. It's accompanied us for so many years, and it's something that's very connected to our essence, and we understand that it's very important. So I'd be very happy if today we could somehow see what is so important in this book that is so much so in the center of our identity, and why is it so hard for us to give up on it, and if we don't really understand it. I grew up not in a secular or an Orthodox education, because I grew up in an education that's not this or that, where it was just materialistic. There's this world, we're living like animals, we're born, we live, and die. And that's basically the atheistic. Well, that's life, no? It's like no more than that. If you can and you're capable to benefit in some way to yourself, then please, you can arrange this life in a better way. And there are different struggles in this and different opinions, and then there's it just, things develop, one's to the good, one's to the bad, and that's life, that's the world. And when I started, but the distress inside of knowing, of wanting to know the secret of life, because everything we have in nature has a reason and has a purpose. Nothing is done just like that. Nature is very deterministic, very persistent, very precise. The more we learn about it and study it, we more and more see that it's like that. And there are things that we don't know. Maybe there are things that we don't. It's not a matter of it doesn't exist, but it's just a blemish in our knowledge, in my study. And in a few years, maybe in another 10 years, maybe another 100 years, or 1,000 years. But even that can be reached. Meaning there are no boundaries to the development of man. We're going to reach the planets and to any place. We'll study all that there is. What's before our feet and what's above in the heavens. That's how I grew up. And that's why I came to the wisdom of Kabbalah with a truly materialistic question. What is life? What's the secret of life? For me, I went to study biocybernetics, which was my profession in the that I studied in the university. And I graduated and started to prepare myself towards a doctorate and more other things. And I saw that all of that was just a engagement with no benefit. And then the strength to deal with it just disappeared from me. And that's it. And then I came to Israel. I immigrated to Israel. I did Aliyah. And here too, I started somewhat in the Weizmann Institute. Also, according to my profession, I saw that it is just destructive work, that you work there for hundreds of hours, and with what? Once again, the same technical matters without studying and researching the secret of life, which was really important for me. Because nevertheless, where does this come from and where is it going? We're in the middle. We see here some fragment, very small fragment of the whole process. I want to know the whole process. And even beyond that, what's the reason that preceded it and what the result that is going to come out of it. And then, a year and a half after I came, everyone said to me, with such questions, you need to go to the religious people. They know, they deal with those things. Go to there. I really went to the different factions there, to different trainings, and within a few months I saw that it's all limited, and it's all just in order to know what you should observe, and you just need to do that, and don't ask any more than that. And even if you just lower your head and just do and don't ask any questions, it's good, and by doing so you're more devoted, more obedient, and devoted to doing his desire, like a servant. A servant is considered to do as the Creator has commanded on you to do. Now, if I weren't to continue onwards, I would leave completely. But what helped me was that I was amongst people in Rehovot, such people that And during those times, there weren't many people who were doing tshuva, the repentance into orthodoxy. And that was really burning. And other than that, I really helped them. And then they did a certain meeting between them, and they asked what to do with such a case. And in Rehovot, there was a Rav named Rav Führer. He was from Holland. And and he said to them, you need to find him someone who deals with some of the internality of the Torah. He said there are some souls, even though he wasn't like that, but there are souls that need it. And then they took me to Jerusalem, to Rav Zilberman. That was during that same time that Uri Zohar came to him and several others like him. And I studied there with him, maybe for half a year. He would come to me to Rehovot also during that time. My son studied with him in the seminary, in the Cheder, according to special education of Ramchal there. It was actually a very special place there. And I studied with him already. From him I heard, we studied the Sefer Tzniuta of the Agra, San Kabbalah. Other than that, I studied in parallel the Babylonian Talmud, different things, little lighter things and more heavy things. And to the point where I saw that that too is not sufficing. Because someone also hear me saying, let's just be sufficient with this, let's be sufficient with that. And that's why I started to search onwards. At one point I was in Tel Aviv, and I went with my business travels to somewhere, and I saw a big notice, a big announcement, a study for the wisdom, an institute. I immediately went there. I remember where it was. I went there. I came. I bought from them all the books, like the Julio. I filled my car with all the books that they had. And I came to, I signed up for the course. I went to one lecture, and that's it. More than that, I didn't go. I just told them, where is the manager? I wanted to talk to him. Well, they saw that I'm really serious, and they said, he'll be here and there, and come. So I came to that place. He was there. I don't remember what he was doing there, but because he would only come once in a while, and he'd also give a lesson. I spoke to him. I said, I wanted to study in a serious manner, not like here, with the guys and girls and all that, and like a cup of coffee, and they're passing their time. It was in Bukhreshov in Tel Aviv, and that's it. And he says, okay, come. And I started to come to him. I was with him. I'd come to him at 5 o'clock in the morning. I came to study with him, and then I'd with him. But he took maybe 2 or 3 others, guys, that were they were like teachers there in the institute. And we studied with them. And afterwards, I said, I want to study alone. So he said, okay. Let's say we studied Monday and Thursday with them, and you'll come Tuesday and Wednesday. So I would come to him at 5 o'clock in the morning and study. After, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks, maybe 3-4 times I was there with him, I saw that it's not Kabbalah. It's getting to know your face and your hand reading and the sun and all kinds of carnation. It was something that was, I just feel it within, whether it's truth or not, whether it clothes on me or not. If it doesn't clothe me, I just can't enter into it. And it's like a certain very deep inner criticism in me, even stronger than me. And if that point doesn't agree, I can't do anything with it. Surely like that. I am under its control of this point. And I left. I said, I have a lot of work now, I have problems, and I left. And that's it. But from time to time, they'd invite me to a wedding there, just one of the teachers got married, and so on. And so, once every so many months, there was something going on there. And so, it's really a wonder that when I bought all the books of Baal HaSulam from him, and I didn't feel like thinking that he has students, that he has relatives, that I can find them. It's no problem in Israel. It's a small country, after all. You can find. I don't know. That was kind of disconnected from myself. But with that, I would study. In the evening, I found a friend, and we would study in the evening all these books. I don't know what exactly, how much we understood it, but we studied. And it was actually somehow attractive. Other than Baal HaSulam, we also studied other things, also the Ari and Ramak and Ramchal. And a little bit of Agra. And one day I said to him, let's go travel, look in Nebak for someone. How much can we sit here like this? And it's good for us, we're sitting at home, it's coffee, and it's nice, but in the evenings and studying, but we need someone to direct us. And we traveled to Nebak, it was in the winter, rainy, I remember the weather was really bad, but we traveled there, and by incident there, we're asking them, where do we learn Kabbalah here? So, one religious man like that with all his regalia says, you turn now left, and to the end of the road, that's where they learn Kabbalah. So, we drove there, and that's when I found Rabash, the elder son of, the firstborn son of Baal HaSulam. So I did a spin of maybe 3 years from 1975 to 1979 until I found him. And when I started to study there, immediately, the moment I sat down, and they started to explain to me what is written in those books that I was studying, well, it was the preface to the study of Kabbalah, so we started to learn. Immediately, I started to feel, that point in my heart is coming down. That's why what I'm trying to say is, if a person has that inner demand, then he doesn't leave. And he won't sell it. And anyone who doesn't is basically operated from that same point, actually. Every one of us is searching for the essence or the meaning of life. But until he finds it in money, honor, knowledge, other things also, whatever there is. That's why, from this point, also a person looks at the Bible, where each sees in it what he wants. If he's studying, let's say, to be a lawyer, and then he looks in there and sees the rules, the laws. There are many rules and laws there. The whole Talmud is actually rules and laws. And they study a lot of it. Actually, lawyers like a lot to talk also in the language of the Bible. And yes, they like to quote. Yes, for them it's considered whoever studies history that he thinks from there is something that suits him. But no one other than the Kabbalists, first of all, doesn't understand it, which is written, and doesn't agree with the whole book and with its whole depth and wholeness, and doesn't feel it, or feel that text or that book, and is not just calm with what is written, because you always can ask questions that, well, that's written. Well, I saw this kind of excuse and that excuse, but they're excuses. Not that with the text of the Bible, he flows with it. Where he and the Bible are in some unity, some friendship, I would even say, an embrace, where the Bible lives in him, where he has no contradictions from the Bible, but that when he reads it, he understands, knows, feels, he tastes what the it's called the tameh Torah, the taste flavors of the Torah. And he tastes how it works. Such people are only the Kabbalists, and also it's those that invested much in their inner change, where they could overcome and rise above their earthly nature. And they themselves are the only ones that understand what the secret, which is in the Bible. That it's not a historical book at all, and not geography, and not something that is written about some relationships between us and to be, maybe some kind of book on values and ethics, family life, some kind of traditions, nothing. It's also not the book of laws of the 613 commandments that are thought of to be taken out of there. But this is, in the eyes of Kabbalists, the book of life, meaning a person that opens his inner qualities and rises above his nature, which is completely egoistic, the will to receive, above it, towards altruism, towards the desire to bestow. All of a sudden he opens a new channel of perception, thought, and feeling. And in that he lives in an embrace with the Bible. Because the Bible explains to him how you now, as you have risen to this degree, this spiritual degree, as we call it, above the regular relationship that people have that live, how you can flow with that flow. It's like a river where a person truly, with joy and with pleasures that are supreme pleasures that he discovers, and with all this that he reveals there, how he truly he flows with it, in it. And that's why only those people understand what the Bible is. And even though many commentaries were written, there are dozens and hundreds of commentaries, no matter how many, and also Kabbalists wrote commentaries and interpretations, and philosophers write interpretations, and who not? Anyone who comes and does some kind of doctorate in philosophy or something like that takes and interprets it however he feels like. It's nevertheless a book that many touch, but that is all not belonging here, because really a person can discover only or reveal only if he raises himself to a degree in which the Bible was sealed or written, which is a level of all the authors of the Bible, they were all in degrees of bestowal of the other nature. Degrees of what? Degrees of the second nature, the nature of bestowal and not the nature of reception. What does that mean? Well, it's they basically had qualities that were out, they acquired qualities that were outside their own nature. And the language itself, Baal HaSulam explains to us, in the, not in the introduction, but in inner observation of first part of the study of Tenth Tefillot, his main book, he explains there what the language of branches is in which all the books, the holy books, are written. And of course the Bible, all the, what we call the holy books. And he explains that, of course, one should not search for something within the texts. But if anyone wants to be a doctor to some in something, in the linguistics or philosophy or whatever there is, then he should search for different formulas there. That's his matter, just like a lawyer takes out of their something. But if anyone wants to see the truth, meaning to what is truly told to us by the authors of the Bible, then he must also be in the recognition of the language, which is called the language of branches. Meaning he needs to reach the roots, the upper roots, and what they talk about, which are already in a world that is completely a world of bestowal. Let's say the second floor, the second degree above us. And this, through, by reading the text, he immediately, as he reads it, he, which was written in Hebrew and somewhat in Aramaic, it could be. It's the same thing. It's a language and its opposite. And he needs to also, according to these words, to discover these roots in the second degree, in the upper world. And then he will see in these words, in these letters, in the form of the letters, in the this combination between them that is there, he will see a very deep wisdom. But once again, it's only for those people that have been through the proper and right preparation in order to reach and feel that that second degree, meaning the quality of bestowal, to live within it, and then what they read, they understand and feel and live it. And you are all alive today. Okay, that's fascinating, the whole potential that exists here. We only have very little time here, so I really wanted to ask, this book is the book of our nation. We are the nation of the book. We're not the nation of the book. The book belongs to us, but we need to open it. We are now in exile from the book, in exile from that second degree. We need to reach a state in which we truly ascend to that state, which is all bestowal, love of others, love of the world, and then we will understand what's written in that book. Without the quality of love, without the quality of connection between us, the mutual guarantee, we won't be able to open the book correctly. Meaning it's not supposed to be the virtue of a few. There's a certain fountain that should be for everyone. There was a period where it was only a virtue for individuals. And throughout all of history, it was since the days of Abraham and until the ruin of the temple, it was for all the people of Abraham, or the whole of the nation, all the group of Abraham which he assembled. And then since the ruin of the temple until the Ari, it was in concealment and only individuals engaged in it. Maybe there were tens, maybe hundreds, maybe even thousands, but no more than that in every generation. And now, once again, we are rising from the exile towards redemption, meaning in order to discover, to reveal the internality of the book. And we do that through connection and love. Through connection and love, which we attain only by the wisdom of Kabbalah. Because the light in it reforms. Thank you very much, Rav Lightman. We will want to do more discussions on this topic. It's fascinating, but our time is over. Thank you very much, Tal. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best. New life.
Michael Lehtman, on Quora, suicide, why do people kill themselves? People who commit suicide do not want to endure ongoing feelings of frustration and emptiness. Like any person, they wanted to become fulfilled, and today there are myriad pleasures available to us, at the tap of a button, but suicidal people find fulfillment to be completely elusive. The inner distress they feel within exceeds any sensations that they can receive from anyone else. What do these people ultimately need? They need the answer to the meaning of life. Do our lives have meaning, a goal and a purpose that make our lives worth living? What is our impetus to continue living on in life? Such questions awaken in certain people, and they drive some people to seek their answers, and some to a pit of desperation, where they would like to invert such questions and sensations, but they cannot, and then they reach the end. To get answers to the questions about life's meaning, I recommend checking out the links in my Quora bio, where there is a plethora of courses and other materials available to help people find the answers to life's deepest questions. Medium published my new article, The Power of Thought, More Powerful Than We Thought. Did you think that your thoughts build or ruin the world around you? They do. They are our desires brain that designs the world we live in. We've known for decades that humanity is destroying the planet, that our way of life is unsustainable, and that we are living on borrowed time at the expense of our children. We've known it, we've tried to stop ourselves. But we couldn't. Only COVID stopped our reckless conduct. If it goes away, we will destroy whatever's left of our planet and leave nothing for prosperity. We can't help it since our actions are offshoots of our thoughts, and as long as our thoughts are negative, so will be our actions. We are looking for a cure to COVID-19, but we're forgetting that it comes from the same source that creates all our sicknesses, from viruses to hurricanes. Just as we don't need to work on fixing our behavior toward the environment, but on fixing our thoughts, which make us mistreat the environment, we don't need to focus on curing the virus but on curing its cause, our iniquitous thoughts. Kabbalists don't deal so much with restricting CO2 emissions, recycling waste, or saving endangered species, not because they don't care about our world. On the contrary, they care about all of life and all of nature a great deal. This is why they focus on the core problem, the malfunction that generates all that is negative in our world, our thoughts. If we change our thoughts, we will change the world around us. If we change our thoughts from negative to positive, not a single problem will remain unsolved. We could argue that we can't control our thoughts, that they pop up in our brain without asking permission. It's true that thoughts don't ask permission before they emerge, but we can tweak the factory that creates them, the social environment we live in. If we are born into an environment that says you're only as good as your last conquest, then we will have no choice but to become ruthlessly competitive until we exhaust ourselves to death. In the process, we will destroy everything around us, people, animals, plants, and minerals. Currently, this is more or less the way we all behave, which is why the world is such a mess. We can change our world. If we start nurturing a different culture, embracing diversity, encouraging originality, supporting cooperation, and rewarding displays of solidarity, our world will instantly change from bad to good. We won't need to worry about what we should or shouldn't do, we will need to worry only about what to think or not to think. We can change our world. If we start nurturing a different culture, embracing diversity, encouraging originality, supporting cooperation, and rewarding displays of solidarity, our world will instantly change from bad to good. We won't need to worry about what we should or shouldn't do, we will need to worry only about what to think or not to think. We cannot change our thoughts by ourselves. But together, there is nothing we can't achieve. We can even transform our very nature from the negative attitude we are born with to a positive attitude that we will all have created together. We are looking for a cure to COVID-19, but we're forgetting that it comes from the same source that creates all our sicknesses, from viruses to hurricanes. Just as we don't need to work on fixing our behavior toward the environment, but on fixing our thoughts, which make us mistreat the environment, we don't need to focus on curing the virus but on curing its cause, our iniquitous thoughts. It would be great if we could find a vaccine for COVID-19, but unless we solve its root cause, more and worse menaces will come in its wake, so we might as well work on a systemic solution right now and truly transform our lives to what they can be instead of staying stuck neck deep in the quagmire that our lives have become. The Times of Israel published my new article, "The Social Media Giant's Campaign Against Anti-Semitism is Mere Pretense." A Times of Israel story recently reported festively, YouTube removes Louis Farrakhan's Nation of Islam channel. According to the story, YouTube announced that it has strict policies prohibiting hate speech on YouTube, and will terminate any channel that repeatedly or egregiously violates those policies. 2 lines later, however, you read that some individual accounts of Nation of Islam members are still up, with tens of thousands of followers. It would be interesting to know YouTube's definition of strict policies. Another festive headline, this time on CNN Business, announced that Facebook will ban Holocaust denial posts under hate speech policy. According to the report, Facebook decided on the ban because of the well-documented rise in anti-Semitism, the alarming level of ignorance about the Holocaust. I wonder what set off this policy U-turn, because as recently as 2 months ago, The Guardian reported that the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, ISD, had found that Facebook's algorithm actively promotes Holocaust denial content. Clearly, this concern about anti-Semitism to you isn't credible. 3 weeks before the election, the only reason that would make social media platforms proclaim to take steps to curb anti-Semitism is their desire to play it safe. In my estimate, they feel that President Trump has a real chance of being re-elected and are adjusting their policies to that scenario. In short, their campaign against anti-Semitism is nothing but lip service. For Jews, however, social media policies make no difference. They don't abate anti-Semitism whatsoever. Anti-Semitism stems from the core of human nature, from a deep-seated feeling of non-Jews that Jews are unlike any other nation. Their accusations that Jews control the media, the banks, the government, and manipulate them to their advantage and against other faiths speaks volumes about the power that non-Jews attribute to Jews. Their accusation that Jews cause all the wars and all the troubles in the world is in fact an admission that they believe that the Jews have the power to end the wars and troubles in the world. And while the Jews don't know it, they do have the key to ending all the troubles. Jews don't need social media bans to curb Jew hatred. All they need is to stop hating one another and the world will stop hating them. Jews are always at the center of attention. The world envies Israel for its military power and technological advancement, and it envies diaspora Jews for being wealthier than other communities. Money, arms, and high tech don't earn the Jews any points in the eyes of the world. On the contrary, they only increase Jew hatred, since this is not what the world expects. The world looks at the Jews so carefully because it needs a way to connect, to end conflicts, to rise above hatred, to save itself from self-destruction. And only the Jews, who coin the motto "Love your neighbor as yourself," can show the way, by personal example. There are three Jews among this year's Nobel Prize laureates. No one will be grateful to Jews for this. But if Jews made peace among themselves, between Democrats and Republican Jews, between Ashkenazi and Sephardi Jews, between Orthodox and secular Jews, now that would be something that the world would appreciate. Jewish leaders throughout the ages have avowed that Jewish unity is our only way to escape persecution. So far, their words have found no listeners, and hate increases both among Jews and toward Jews. If we, the Jewish people, want to avoid another Holocaust, we should start paying attention to our sages throughout the ages, and to the world's call for peace, first among ourselves, and then throughout the world. For a more elaborate explanation on the root and solution to antisemitism, refer to my book, The Jewish Choice: Unity or Antisemitism. Michael Leitman, on Quora: How will the coronavirus be defeated if we can't get rid of the seasonal flu? We will see an end to the coronavirus when we overcome our negative thoughts, divisiveness and hatred of each other. Today's world is fundamentally different to the past because our present era increasingly reveals how dependent we are on each other, all around the world. And the more we depend on each other, the more we rely on each member of human society upholding values of consideration and responsibility toward their fellow human beings. We need mutual consideration and responsibility today more than ever to spare ourselves from a lot of unnecessary suffering, and more so, to create a safer and happier future for all people. In terms of the coronavirus, we are still in stages where we think that it will soon end and everything will return to normal again. But it won't. The new era of interdependence that we have entered demands that we bridge our rivalries in order to experience our tightening connection harmoniously. Likewise, the coronavirus will subside to the extent that we rise above our negative attitudes to each other and positively connect. We simply fail to see how much the health or illness of our bodies and surrounding society depends on the positivity or negativity of our thoughts in relation to other people. Until we start actively surrounding ourselves with socio-cultural influences that inspire us to compromise, cooperate, care for one another, and positively connect, then we will continue seeing a rise in negative phenomena, from more and more people falling ill with the virus, to more and more people losing their jobs, their businesses, and their sanity the more they have to maintain social distance. Today's tightening interdependent conditions embody a new stage in human evolution, and so we will have to get used to the fact that we will not return to our pre-coronavirus lives. As evolutionary biologists have shown, nature constantly evolves through crisis to greater cooperation and unity, and today is precisely a time of global crisis preparing us to make a global-scale unifying shift. If we fail to actualize our shift to greater unification above our differences willingly, then we will experience tightening interdependence in an undesirable fashion. It would be akin to sharing a small room with our biggest adversaries. However, if we make moves to positively connect above our divisive inclinations, prioritizing values of mutual consideration and responsibility throughout human society, then we will experience a whole new harmonious world open up to us, ensuring good health, safety and happiness for all. True love and perfect family. Question: What is true love? Answer: True love is absolute trust, impeccable support, self-sacrifice, and confidence that you are treated the same way. Question: Throughout the development of mankind, the concept of family has changed greatly. What is an ideal family today? Answer: An ideal family is the same as ideal love. It is built on top of all the problems, with them, and in spite of them. Therefore, if people knew how to create bridges over problems and keep them safe, then true love is created. Love is a consequence of a very hard work over one's own and other people's shortcomings. Question: what does it mean to live above problems? Answer: knowing all the problems, we try, without closing our eyes to them, to respect the other, value him or her, and be connected with each other without forgetting about our problems. From CAB TV's Kabbalah Express, September 1, 2020. What does a successful marriage depend on? Question: now all of humanity believes that marriages entered into at mature age are stronger and more stable. Is this really the case? When does a person need to get married? Answer: of course, over time we become wiser. Life educates us, by quite harsh methods. However, you do not have to experience them. It all depends on the education received, what kind of example the child had in the family. We see that children literally are repeating what they see with their parents. In general, I would start educating a person for family life from kindergarten and continue at school, at university, and at work. Home circles, television, everything should be dedicated to the creation of the correct family as the unit of society. From CAB TV's Kabbalah Express, September 1, 2020. What drives a Kabbalist forward? Question: how does the wisdom of Kabbalah determine the degree of sufferings and pleasures that were set for a person who is on the spiritual path? Answer: the degree of suffering depends on a person's recognition of the greatness of the goal. If I want to attain a certain goal and am at a certain distance from it, to the extent that the goal is great in my eyes, the discrepancy between me and the goal is felt as suffering. But it is actually the magnitude of the suffering that drives me forward. I already see the goal and I understand that I have a method of how to attain it. So, I am happy with what is happening, and for me, it is no longer a path of suffering but a path of light. I feel these suffering illuminate the path for me. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, November 18, 2018. Conflicts within a person. Question: is there a difference between the methods of solving external interpersonal conflicts and internal conflicts in a person? Or are they suitable for both cases? Answer: in principle, yes. But inside a person, conflicts are resolved a little differently because one must see both sides of the argument. Comment: let's say, I want to go outside and consider whether to wear a mask or not. There is an internal conflict. On one hand, I am a bit cautious about infecting others. On the other hand, it is uncomfortable to breathe and there seems to be no one around. So, a person constantly makes some calculations. Conflicts arise in one every second. Answer: with a mask, it is quite simple. The fact is that there are specialists who understand how the virus spreads. And if they say that you should wear a mask, then you accept it and put one on even if no one is around. This gives me the opportunity to be honest with myself and with nature. From CAB TV's Management Skills, July 16, 2020. Compass for making decisions. Question: in order to make a correct decision, do you need to detach yourself from feelings and emotions? Is it better to try to find a logical solution to the problem? Answer: you need both. Man is a complex system that includes the heart and the mind. We cannot be guided only by the mind neglecting the heart, and vice versa. We simply need to balance these two systems in the middle line, and then we will make the right decisions. Question: a person should try to connect all decisions with the laws of nature. Can you give an example of how to make such a decision? Answer: there are only two laws in nature, either reception or bestowal. The law of bestowal is faith above reason, the quality of universal connection and love. Come to this level, connect yourself to this law, and then you can correctly solve the problem. In other words, before making a decision, you must understand how the law of reception and how the law of bestowal works. And the harmony between them should become your compass when making a decision. From CAB TV's Management Skills, June 11, 2020.